A Matter of Spirit, a publication of the Inter-Community Peace and Justice Center. Spring 2009 issue, on the theme of water.
First Steps to Shrinking My Water Footprint by Shiny Varghese. Shiny Varghese is a senior policy analyst with the Minneapolis-based Institute for Agriculture and Trade Policy. I live in the United States, where I have a 24-hour running water supply. I take it for granted that I will have running water whenever I need it, for brushing my teeth or washing my hair, for drinking, cooking, or cleaning. I often forget what a luxury it is. Before coming to the U.S., I lived in a small town in western India called Rajkot. My apartment complex was surrounded by a still-developing concrete jungle and promised a regular water supply, which meant that running water was available for an hour each in the morning and evening. I was living by myself, and I would collect enough water in the morning hours to meet my personal needs of the day. I ate my food out often and got my clothes washed outside. For my neighboring families, with at least 4 to 5 members, it was a struggle to meet their water needs. They would often have to resort to water supplied through tankers from neighboring villages, never mind if those villagers were selling water to the city because it was more profitable than raising crops, or even if it was lowering the water table so low that people without mechanical pumps could no longer get enough water to meet their basic needs. The impact of urban water use in Rajkot on surrounding rural areas was clearly visible. Invisible water. However, the connection between my water use in the U.S. and the global water crisis is not so clear. I live in Minnesota by the Mississippi River. Our public water system provides me with excellent water at a very reasonable rate. The same clean water is used for washing our car, watering our lawns, and filling our backyard pools. The average U.S. resident uses 151 gallons a day, compared to less than 15 gallons a day in most African countries. I realize that my daily water use for drinking, cleaning, cooking, and washing is only a small part of the water I use. Most of the water I use is invisible to me. It is in the food I eat, in the soda I drink, and the clothes I wear. It is in the making of the gas I put in my car, in the generation of the electricity I use to light my home, and in the production of my computer and car. With exception of my summer vegetables, most of these things are not made or grown in Minnesota. And thus, most of the invisible water I use is not Minnesota water. It could be from California, Florida, Australia, or South Africa. Global connections. There isn't an easy way to see the connection between my consumption and the water problems that have been hitting headlines. It would be ideal if a specific product or commodity had a label indicating the location of production and or processing along with the water footprint, so that we would know not only the extent of impact, but also where the impact is felt. It is possible that to support the production of my cell phone and my children's toys, Chinese farmers were denied agricultural water, or poor Korean villagers were denied drinking water. I do not know whether, in the process of printing colorful patterns on my shirt, water pollution increased in Bangladesh, or whether, in the process of growing cotton for my shirt, water tables went down in India. My consumption may even be directly affecting water-scarce regions in sub-Saharan Africa. Water for thought. Some time ago, I came across an excellent resource, the Water Footprint Network. Their website, www.waterfootprint.org, explains the concept of a water footprint to help calculate virtual water, the water embedded in the many traded commodities and products that countries import or export and that I consume. Unfortunately, our knowledge is still in too preliminary a stage for it to provide the water footprint for complex industrial products such as synthetic clothes, plastics, or electronic equipment. Also, these calculations are still not 100% accurate, but it is a very good first step and gives plenty of water for thought. I have been looking for ideas to reduce my water footprint. Old-style canning and or freezing of summer vegetables, reducing the meat and other animal-based food items in my diet, shifting to local and or fair-traded products that are sustainably produced, reducing the amount of processed food I buy and the food I waste, switching to carrying a stainless steel water container, using biodegradable and less polluting cleaning products, using public transport and buying less. There is a start for me. Water footprints. One plastic bottle equals 1.5 gallons of water. One cup of tea equals 8 gallons of water. One cup of coffee equals 37 gallons of water. 1 pound of soybeans equals 216 gallons of water. 1 pound of chicken equals 468 gallons of water. 1 pound of cheese equals 600 gallons of water. 1 pound of beef equals 1,861 gallons of water. One automobile equals 32,000 gallons of water.
Water Conflict and Resolution by Stephen Gastier. Stephen Gastier is an assistant professor of sociology at Michigan State University in East Lansing, Michigan. Our experiences tell us that environmental stress, due to lack of water, may lead to conflict and would be greater in poor nations. A quote from United Nations General Secretary Ban Ki-moon, January 24, 2008. Water conflict is the result of groups of people or institutions believing that they are unfairly being denied adequate water resources to meet felt needs or wants. The risk of growing water conflict has increased as population and development have put ever greater pressure on water resources. As Secretary General Ban Ki-moon stated at the 2008 World Economic Forum, quote, "As the global economy grows, so will its thirst. Many more conflicts lie just over the horizon." End quote. Water is, of course, the very essence of life on Earth. Without it, it is estimated that we could live no more than 3 days. Indeed, anyone who has attempted a day or more of fasting during the Muslim holy month of Ramadan understands that as humans we are weakened by prolonged periods without water. The paradox is that while our Earth is a blue planet made up mostly of water, 99% of that water is salt water, unusable in its natural state for human hydration. People are dependent on fresh water to sustain life, as drinking water, in sanitation, and in economic or productive processes. Conflicts over water use tend to be concentrated over water basins. Water flows in natural basins by gravity. Those who live upstream control the flow of water. This can be the basis for water conflicts. For instance, the Rio Grande River is shared by the United States and Mexico. The headwaters of the river are in Colorado and flow downstream through New Mexico and Texas. Because water is siphoned off to support agriculture, industrial and urban development, only rarely does a significant amount of that water reach Mexico, where irrigated farming communities have long suffered drought conditions. Water conflict is generally thought of as the result of biophysical or natural scarcity. When there is not enough to go around, certain actors will take measures to ensure that they get theirs. But scarcity is not only biophysical. Scarcity may, in fact, have environmental conditions, social constructions, and perceptions. Environmental conditions involve low annual precipitation, decreasing precipitation over time, diminishing availability of resources, and high variability of resources. Situations of drought involve rainfall below the recorded average. This may persist over multiple years. In places like Africa, climatologists talk of 20-year drought cycles. Indeed, processes of climate change and global warming may have the effect of decreasing rainfall over time. Social constructions of scarcity involve regulations that can limit access to water resources. For instance, Palestinians have limits on allowable depth of wells placed on them from the Israeli authorities. This impacts both the Palestinian agricultural production and community development potential. While Israel claims to offset this with domestic water supplied by Israel's national water carrier, this source is restricted in the driest part of the year, and Palestinians complain that they are asked to pay more than Israeli consumers for the same water. Cultural presumptions and perceptions may also influence the perception of scarcity, For years, the governments of Las Vegas and Phoenix did little to constrain water use. Businesses flaunted use of water. Think of the famous fountains of Las Vegas. And residences had lawns and swimming pools. While there was little natural water in the area, these were certainly not situations of scarcity. Indeed, these cities became symbols of the misuse of water in the southwestern U.S. Technology and technological development plays a major role in water conflicts. The ability to construct large dams that hold back and divert water for use by upstream users is precisely the cause of disgruntlement by those downstream. The proposed GAP project in Turkey nearly led to war on several occasions with Iraq, which worried that the project would restrict water to the Nile and Euphrates. Technology may also play a role in resolving water conflict. Most frequently, proposals are put forward to increase supply. One example would be the proposed Red Dead Canal, which would pump seawater into the Dead Sea while generating hydroelectric power for use in desalination. As is often the case, this project does not address the underlying cause of the conflict and may have serious unintended consequences. A critical and often underappreciated aspect of water conflict is that of values. Values may be taken in both its forms, monetary and cultural. Both of these aspects are critical. Tony Allen argues that the Middle East water conflicts could be solved if the parties recognized the relative values of activities. For Israel, he argues there is little merit in continuing to produce and trade virtual water through irrigated agriculture. The value of the water is worth more than the products, such as citrus, tomatoes, rice, and cotton. The same is true of many of the other conflicts. The other values that are important are those that respect water as a critical part of the web of life. There are increasing movements to better conserve water. Who lives downstream? What other human or animal communities might utilize this resource? What might we do to preserve and protect this resource for future and present generations? These values will be critical to overcoming water conflict. As a United Nations Development Program Conference on Water Values and Rights stated, there are increasing calls to, quote, develop a new water mentality by which water use is prioritized as vested human rights and is managed in an economical and ecological, sustainable manner instead of being handled as solely a political issue and commercial commodity. End quote. Water hotspots to watch: Jordan and Litani rivers in Israel, the Nile River in Egypt, Sudan, and Ethiopia, the Tigris and Euphrates rivers in Iraq and Syria, the Ganges River in India, and the Kaveri River in India.
The Push Toward Privatization of Water by Richard McIntyre. Richard McIntyre is the Water Policy Director for Food and Water Watch. Two-thirds of the world's population, billions of people, is expected to run short of fresh drinking water by 2025. Meanwhile, there is a movement toward the privatization of water for profit. The World Bank and similar institutions have made loans to developing nations for water service on the condition that they be privately, not publicly, owned and operated. This has opened the door for companies to build inferior water systems and then charge far more than people making mere dollars a day could ever hope to pay. This contrasts with the road to private control of water in developed nations. Much of our nation's water and sewer system is outdated and in need of upgrades, but many communities are strapped for cash and unable to make improvements. Instead, multinational water companies such as RWE, Suez, and Veolia have approached local officials with claims that they can manage the systems more efficiently than the public sector. Unfortunately, communities all over the world have witnessed the empty promises of economic efficiency from privatization. In 2005, the government of Tanzania canceled its 10-year contract with UK-based Bywater after 2 years of poor management and unmet obligations left people without water and the government short about 3.25 million. In early 2008, an international tribunal ruled that the company must pay almost $8 million in damages and fees to the state water utility in Dar es Salaam. Halfway around the world in Ecuador, the Inter-American Development Bank loaned $40 million to government to prepare for International Water Services, a subsidiary of Bechtel, to operate the water and sewer system in the country's largest city, Guayaquil. The local subsidiary, Interagua, dismissed all the workers from the previously owned public utility. The company partially bowed to public pressure by rehiring 20% of them the following year. The phenomenon and problems of water privatization is not limited to the developing world. The city of Atlanta gave United Water a 20-year, $428 million contract in 1999 to operate and manage Atlanta's water and sewer system. The company overstated the amount of money it could save the city and underestimated the work needed to maintain and operate the system. In over its head, the company cut costs by letting go almost 400 employees. It raised sewer rates an average of 12% every year it had the contract. Atlanta terminated the contract in January 2003. Farther south, New Orleans was fortunate in that it only flirted with water privatization. The city dropped such plans in 2004 after 5 years and $5.7 million worth of study. The 20-year, $1.5 billion contract would have been the largest ever awarded in the United States. These stories illustrate that whether communities sit in the middle of Africa or the United States, the promises of economic efficiency from privatization come with their own problems and challenges. Fortunately, people across the world increasingly understand this and are standing up in defense of affordable access to clean and safe water for everyone. Water by numbers. Each person needs 5 to 10 gallons of safe fresh water a day. More than 1 in 6 people worldwide, 894 million, do not have access to safe fresh water. Globally, diarrhea is the leading cause of illness and death. 88% of diarrhea deaths are due to lack of sanitation and safe water. Fresh water resources make up 2.5% of the total volume of water on Earth. Of that, less than 1% is usable by humans. By 2025, 1.8 million people will be living with absolute water scarcity, and 2/3 of the world population could be under stress conditions. Selling the Rain by Thomas Merton in his book Rain and the Rhinoceros in 1964. Let me say this before rain becomes a utility that they can plan and distribute for money. By they, I mean the people who cannot understand that rain is a festival, who do not appreciate its gratuity, who think that what has no price has no value, that what cannot be sold is not real, so that the only way to make something actual is to place it on the market. The time will come when they will sell you even your rain.
Think Outside the Bottle by Patty Lynn. Patty Lynn is campaign manager for Corporate Accountability's Think Outside the Bottle campaign. Traditionally, water has been regarded by many as a common good to be shared by all. But in the face of the growing global water crisis, some of the world's most powerful corporations are privatizing our public water systems, transforming access to an essential resource into simply another opportunity to profit. Here in the United States, corporations are privatizing our water, bottling it, and selling it back to us at prices hundreds, even thousands of times what tap water costs. Corporations are poised to capitalize on concerns about water safety and water scarcity. In fact, bottled water corporations have continued to bottle water for profit during drought conditions both in the United States and abroad. The bottled water industry's environmental footprint is no less significant. The production and manufacturing of the bottled water for the U.S. market consumes the equivalent of well over 17 million barrels of oil each year. Enough fuel to run more than 1 million cars for the same time period. This leaves out the energy consumed by shipping that same water across county, state, and even continental divides. The process also generates more than 2.5 million tons of carbon dioxide per year. To visualize these energy costs of the life cycle of a bottle of water, imagine filling up a quarter of each bottle with oil. What's more, our oceans and cities are filling up with discarded plastic waste. Bottled water corporations spend tens of millions of dollars each year to convince us that what comes out of the bottle is different than what flows from the tap. But tap water is much more highly regulated than bottled water and has more independent oversight by state and federal environmental authorities. Corporate Accountability International's Think Outside the Bottle campaign is a national effort to support public water systems and encourage consumers and governments to choose tap over bottled water. Ask. Our members are calling on Coke, Pepsi, and Nestle to reveal the sources and sites of the water used for bottling, publicly report breaches in bottled water quality comparable to reports by public water systems, and stop threatening local control of water when siting and operating bottled water plants. Pledge. The campaign is partnering with prominent restaurants, universities, faith groups, and tens of thousands of people across North America to make a pledge to use tap water over bottled water and to support strong public water systems. Resolve. The campaign has worked with leading national mayors to pass a resolution encouraging all cities to phase out taxpayer spending on bottled water and instead invest in strong public water systems. Our public water infrastructure stands to get an infusion of much-needed dollars as part of the National Economic Stimulus Package recently signed into law. Building upon our success with mayors, our members and organizers nationwide are calling on their governors to stop bottled water spending and prioritize public water systems. In the same way that water has been parceled out among bottlers, it can be reclaimed by communities and officials. With continued involvement in these efforts, we can protect our democratic control of this basic human right. When we think outside the bottle, we help make sure water systems remain under public control and continue to serve and strengthen our community for generations to come.
Water's Sacred Meanings by Gary Chamberlain. Dr. Gary Chamberlain is professor of Christian ethics at Seattle University. His most recent book, Troubled Waters, Religion, Ethics, and the Global Water Crisis, was published in 2008. Rarely in analyses and conversations about water are cultural, and in particular, religious dimensions brought to light. Yet for billions of the globe's peoples, their fundamental conceptions about the natural world and water are influenced to some degree by religious considerations, whether those are feelings of disdain, indifference, respect, or even love. Indigenous peoples. Among indigenous peoples, water has a sacred quality. For the Koji of northern Colombia, water is aluna, the primordial stuff of the universe. Whether for the Koji or the Salish of the Northwest, the Cree of eastern Canada, the Australian Aboriginals, or the Ashanti of Africa, water is the birthplace of all peoples and of the earth itself. Hinduism. For Hindus, water is one of the five interdependent sacred elements of the world: earth, air, fire, water, and space. The sacred status of rivers implies their place in purifying souls. Bathing in the sea, river, stream, or pond grants salvation. The waters absorb the moral dirt of worshippers. Hindu texts support keeping the waters clean and pure. Buddhism. Beliefs in the interconnectedness of all things, reincarnation, and the pervasive presence of suffering lead Buddhists to a special mindfulness in relation to the natural world, to water. Vietnamese monk Thich Nhat Hanh states, quote, "We should deal with nature the way we deal with ourselves. We should not harm ourselves. We should not harm nature. Water itself is a good friend, a bodhisattva, a Buddha-like person who steps aside from entering nirvana to help others, which nourishes the many thousands of species." Confucianism. Confucian thought is concerned with proper human behavior and the exercise of virtue in relation to the natural world. The great Confucian scholar Mencius sees the law of water and the law of morality as connected. A good ruler would bring order to the world and to water. Quote, "The tendency of human nature to good is like the tendency of water to flow downwards." End quote. Taoism. In Taoism, one achieves harmony through actionless action, and the Tao is often viewed as water which does not resist, but flows gracefully, eventually bringing changes through its effortless flow. Humans accomplish harmony through the flow of their actions in harmony with the rest of nature. Judaism. In Judaism, God is the source of spiritual drink and nourishment. At the same time, God is the origin of the physical waters that nurture God's people. The Exodus story relates the many times Moses used water for deliverance. Rituals emphasize water's power for purification, such as hand washing at the Seder Supper. Water cleanses humanity, bringing humans closer to God. Christianity. Water figures prominently in the life of Jesus. From his baptism to his many references to living waters, culminating in the water that flowed from his side at the crucifixion. Water is powerfully symbolic as an instrument of God's powers of healing, purifying, and cleansing. The holy water blessed during the Easter ceremonies becomes the water of purification, used throughout the year at rituals and ceremonies such as baptism. Islam. According to the Quran, Allah has created from water every living creature. Water is a symbol of paradise, a reminder of Allah's gift in a harsh desert climate. Wells are especially venerated because of water scarcity. Muslim law views water as a communal resource. A hierarchy exists among uses. First, the right of thirst. That is, no one can be denied drinking water since life is involved. Then, needs of bathing, cleaning, and cooking. Next, livestock. And lastly, irrigation of crops. The very purpose of water is to revive the earth and all upon it.
A Female Responsibility by Rose Bernadette Gallagher, Marino Missionary. Sister Rose Bernadette Gallagher, Marino Missionary, is a staff member of the Marino Office of Global Concerns. Women's lives all around the world are closely connected to water. Women and girls are responsible for collecting water for cooking, cleaning, health and hygiene, and, if they have access to land, growing food. In rural areas, women walk long distances to fetch water, often spending 4 to 5 hours per day, carrying heavy containers and suffering acute physical problems. In Nanyangachor, Sudan, the nearest hospital is 15 hours away by road in dry weather. During the rainy season, roads are impassable, resulting in many deaths of women and children. In arid and drought-prone areas, the challenge is compounded, while in urban areas, women and girls can spend hours waiting in line to collect intermittent water supplies at standpipes. The inordinate burden of fetching water inhibits women's involvement in other activities, such as education, income generation, cultural and political involvement, rest, and recreation. Pollution and lack of access to clean water proliferate the cycle of poverty, waterborne diseases, and gender inequities. The World Health Organization estimates that 80% of all sickness in the world is attributable to unsafe water and sanitation. The correlation between water and sanitation is evident, as maintenance of family health is mostly viewed as a female responsibility. Extensive degradation of ecosystems, polluted water, contamination of groundwater and aquifers, overconsumption of water in rich countries and by the rich in poor countries, as well as the impact of extreme poverty, have all contributed to an environmental catastrophe in the world's water supply. In their roles as caregivers and managers of households and natural resources, women are most affected by the current global water crisis. Women use vegetation and forests for medicinal plants, food and fuel, as well as for income generation. But these ecosystems rely on a healthy water supply. As the environment deteriorates, women's livelihoods become increasingly vulnerable. Satou Diouf from Gedaig, Senegal, explains that we, the women, are responsible for feeding our families. The bush has now become a desert shrub in my area, and there is nowhere to go fetch wood. One day, unable to find enough wood, I used some branches to cook. Since the wood was not enough, I cut my plastic bassinet in pieces to fuel the fire. Then I took the wooden bench where I was seated and cut it to feed the fire. Water and the Millennium Development Goals. The Water for Life Decade, from 2005 through 2015, recognizes the central role that women play in providing, managing, and safeguarding water, and as the main role models within the family when it comes to sanitation and hygiene. it is crucial to ensure the full participation and equal involvement of women and to approach water and sanitation issues from a gender perspective. The benefits and cost of water use can accrue equitably to all groups, and the creativity, energy, and knowledge of both women and men can contribute to making water systems work better. Improvements in access to safe water and sanitation that involve both women and men will lead to multiple benefits in other areas, such as reducing poverty, enabling girls to get an education, and reducing child and maternal mortality. Recommendations. Involve women and men equally in decision-making. Pay attention to the privacy and security needs of women and girls with regard to the location and design of sanitation facilities. Improve access to water for all. Accord women equitable access to land and other resources. Focus water and sanitation education and training programs on women and men equally.
Story of Hope, the Baquita Women's Project. The Widows of Kaloma, a small town in the southern province of Zambia, began their journey to water independence through the simple act of knitting. With the help of a local group of the Sisters of the Presentation, the women formed a knitting club which they named Baquita Women, after one of the first female African saints, Josephine Baquita. In addition to providing for their own families, many of the women cared for children who had been orphaned in the HIV pandemic. First of all, we discovered the healing power of sharing stories, said Presentation Sister Numba Mukea. This is how the knitting activity started, as the women shared their stories and helped one another to solve their problems. They knitted. With the profits from their knitting club, they decided to join their efforts in another venture, farming. They planted maize on 4 hectares of leased land. Over time, the women were able to meet the basic needs of more than 30 local families. Eventually, they purchased a small farm on which they planted maize, fruit, and vegetables. They also planned to build a bore well for irrigation. But they were advised by the agricultural officer not to put a bore well in that area, said Presentation Sister Prema Antony, as it would not have water in the dry months when they most needed it. Instead, they decided to build a dam to harness rainwater and provide a year-round water source. The women began by digging the core trench for the dam themselves. They emptied the riverbed located on the property line and collected the sand to make bricks. Most of the manual work was done by the women. They needed to rent machinery to finish building the dam, but before they could raise enough money, the rainy season began. The heavy rains washed away the core trench the women had dug. But they did not give up hope, according to Antony. The next year, they raised the necessary funding to complete the dam project. Today, the rainwater harnessed by the dam is used by the Baquita women for their orchards, vegetable gardens, maize planting, fish farming, and livestock. They also allow neighboring villagers, who previously had to walk up to 5 kilometers to find water, to use the water for drinking, household, and agricultural purposes. The group owns 7 cattle, 2 of which are used for plowing, the rest for milking. The women are also learning how to raise pigs and goats and have introduced fish into the dam. Fruit trees, mangoes, pawpaw, citrus, avocado, custard apples, and guavas have been planted on the property, and some have started bearing fruit. The dam provides a steady source of water and allows for year-round production on the farm. The group has become self-reliant and gained dignity as they take pride in ownership of their project, the work of their hands, said Antony. The women can plan for the future as they do not have to totally depend on the rain. This straw saves lives. On any given day, more than 6,000 people, mostly children, die as a result of drinking contaminated water. The makers of the Life Straw wanted to design a water filter that could be easily used in challenging physical environments, even by children. The Life Straw turns contaminated water into safe drinking water just by drinking through the straw. Each straw costs just a few dollars and can provide a year's worth of safe drinking water. The Rotary Club of Fort Lauderdale, Florida, makes it easy to donate a Life Straw to a family in Tanzania, Kenya, Malawi, or Ghana. Visit lifestraw.123yourweb.com.
Creative responses to the water crisis. First creative response. Kids play. Water pumps. Imagine a playground that not only provides hours of good, clean fun, it also provides safe, clean water for the local community. The play pump water system, a child's merry-go-round attached to a water pump, storage tank, and tap, makes this dream a reality. As the children spin round and round, they draw clean water from underground. To date, the nonprofit Play Pumps International has installed more than 1,000 play pumps in sub-Saharan Africa. Where we used to get water is a long way from our place, said Trofina Nwana of Akenhoek, South Africa. Play pump is better. It is clean and fresh. www.playpumps.org. The second creative response. Native plants. Native plants need less water, chemicals, and pesticides to survive in your yard than exotic species from other locales. Verde Native Plant Nursery is a non-profit in Portland, Oregon, that promotes native plants while also increasing opportunities for low-income people in the green economy. Verde works with Hacienda CDC, an affordable housing provider, to provide job training to their residents in the training greenhouse. The plants are used on Hacienda CDC properties as well as other wetland restoration and stormwater management projects. Visit www.plantnative.org to learn about native plants. The third creative response to the water crisis. Shower challenge. How long is your shower in the morning? The average American takes an 8-minute shower, using 20 gallons of water. Reducing your shower by just 1 minute could save up to 1,826 gallons a year. A group of young people in Brooklyn, New York, calling themselves the Brooklyn Green Team, challenged 160 of their friends to a 5-minute shower challenge last summer. Not everyone makes it all the way through without ever cheating, according to Green Team member Amanda Gentile. But they are more aware and hopefully carry those behaviors forward. Contact your local water utility for other water-saving tips and for free or discounted low-flow shower heads. The fourth creative response: rainy day brush off. The average American roof sheds more than 700 gallons of water per 1 inch of rain. Some people are beginning to use rain barrels to collect rooftop runoff to water plants, lawns, and gardens. In Knox City, Tennessee, local artists and water conservation officials have teamed up for their second annual Rainy Day Brush Off to promote the use of rain barrels. More than 60 artists and several student groups have created original works of art on 55-gallon rain barrels. The barrels will be auctioned off on eBay starting May 16th. Proceeds support community education and conservation efforts. www.waterqualityforum.org.
Ritual and Reflection. The Woman at the Well. Gather a small group for communal contemplation and reflection on the theme of water. Arrange chairs for participants around a small ritual table. Put on the table a cloth, candle, and small bowl of water. Select a song of your choice, such as Come to the Water or Up from the Waters. A reading from the Gospel of Buddha. Ananda, the favorite disciple of the Buddha, having been sent on a mission, passed by a well near a village, and seeing Pakati, a girl of the Matana caste, he asked her for water to drink. Pakati said, "O Brahman, I am too humble and mean to give thee water to drink. Do not ask any service of me, lest thy holiness be contaminated, for I am of low caste." And Ananda replied, "I ask not for caste, but for water." And the Matana's girl's heart leaped joyfully, and she gave Ananda to drink. Let's take a few moments of quiet to reflect on the reading. Imagine that you are the woman, the favorite disciple, or the water itself. What does this feel like? Who asks you for water? Or perhaps you were expecting to hear a different story of the woman at the well. What does this tell you about the human story? After the quiet, I will begin. Sharing. One thing that struck you in the story of Ananda, or one insight about water and the human story. Response prayer. The time will come when they will sell you even your rain. Thomas Merton. Response. When the poor and needy seek water, and there is none, and their tongue is parched with thirst, I will answer them. I, the God of Israel, will not forsake them. Sometimes I go without food, so that my grandchildren have water. Hawa Amadu, Ghanaian grandmother. Response. When the poor and needy seek water, and there is none, and their tongue is parched with thirst, I will answer them. I, the God of Israel, will not forsake them. Entire peoples have been reduced to destitution and are suffering because they lack drinking water. Pope John Paul II. Response. When the poor and needy seek water, and there is none, and their tongue is parched with thirst, I will answer them. I, the God of Israel, will not forsake them. Let us close by sharing the gift of water. I invite you to take the bowl, put your hands in the water, and let the water bless you. Then pass the water to the person sitting next to you, as you say to them, "May your heart leap joyfully at the gift of water." Intercommunity Peace and Justice Center pages. Northwest Cry asks, who should be first? Who should have the right to scarce water supplies first? Farmers trying to grow crops for their survival? Or a multinational corporation? By 2025, industry will account for most of the projected increase in water use. Concerned about water scarcity, shareholders are asking corporations to create comprehensive policies that articulate the company's respect for and commitment to the human right to water. These policies would include that the corporation will abide by national laws that give priority to water for personal and domestic uses, ensure efficient use of water so as not to undermine local populations' access to safe drinking water, provide for environmentally responsible waste disposal, take into account the right to water and involve the community when making decisions about facility setting, and work with government and other stakeholders to ensure that priority is given to water for personal and domestic uses. 2009 shareholder resolutions include Intel Corporation, which uses vast quantities of water in its semiconductor manufacturing process and operates in water-scarce areas like Israel and the American Southwest. PepsiCo, whose main ingredient in its beverages is water. In 2003, PepsiCo's water use license was revoked in Puducherry, India, due to claims that its bottling plants were depleting groundwater. Northwest Cry is among a coalition of faith-based shareholders in dialogue with Coca-Cola regarding its operation in water-scarce India. our meetings are focusing on the human right to water. Parenting for Peace and Justice. The first IPJC Parenting for Peace and Justice group is still going strong. For the first 2 years, we followed the PPJ program and met to share dinner, parenting support, our faith, and to build community. We are now in our fourth year. The topics we choose are often related to the five themes of the original program: peace, simple living, global awareness, the environment, and diversity, and come out of our shared need for insight and support. For the past 2 summers, we have gone camping and hiking together to get to know each other in a more personal way. One of the greatest joys has been to watch our kids grow up together. We are a community of support as we strive to live out the values of peace and justice as parents, and we are a community of faith and fun as well. It is truly great to have other parents to call for help who we know share similar values. Call IPJC today at 206-223-1138 to start a Parenting for Peace and Justice young adult group in your parish. Working to End Human Trafficking. The seeds that were planted in our fall human trafficking events have started to sprout. Together, we can make a difference and stop the demand for human trafficking. We've launched a bus ad campaign on 180 Seattle-area buses. Contact IPJC for information on starting a bus ad campaign in your city. Join us for our silent prayer vigils on the first Sunday of every month at 1:30 p.m. in Westlake Park, Seattle. Contact IPJC for a toolkit to start a monthly vigil in your community. We have also presented at schools and parishes and have a variety of resources on our website. Catholic Advocacy Day. IPJC organized 120 appointments in 40 of the 49 districts in Washington State. A Matter of Spirit is a publication of the Intercommunity Peace and Justice Center. Sponsoring communities include Adrian Dominican Sisters, Oregon Province Jesuits, Sisters of the Holy Names of Jesus and Mary, U.S. Ontario Province, Sisters of Providence, Mother Joseph Province, Sisters of St. Francis of Philadelphia, Sisters of St. Joseph of Peace, Tacoma Dominicans. Affiliate communities include Benedictine Sisters of Cottonwood, Idaho, Benedictine Sisters of Lacey, Benedictine Sisters of Mount Angel, Religious of the Sacred Heart, Sinsinawa Dominicans, Sisters of Charity of the Blessed Virgin Mary, Sisters of St. Joseph of Carondelet, Sisters of St. Mary of Oregon, and Ursuline Sisters of the Roman Union. The editorial board for this issue of Amos included Judy Byron, OP, Giselle Carcamo, Gary Chamberlain, Dr. Anthony Naharaja, Dr. Gretchen Gundrum, Linda Haydock, SNJM, Vince Herberholt, and Pat Higgins. Our editor was Susan Francois, CSJP. This audio issue of A Matter of Spirit was read by Sister Pat Daly, Patty Leanweber, and Susan Francois. The print edition was laid out by Michael Schwindeller. For more information about the Intercommunity Peace and Justice Center, call 206-223-1138 or visit our website www.ipjc.org. Thank you for listening to this audio recording of A Matter of Spirit.